Hello, America, and all of our listeners all over the world. You're listening to yet another exciting edition of Let's Weekend. I'm your host, Mr. Brandon Perkins. Joining me, as always, is Chris Tillage and Patrick Mifflin. Say hi, everybody.
Yo.
Hello.
Yeah, so this week's episode, this is March 18th, 2023, and yeah, some big stuff went down this week. Some of it is going to be infuriating, especially at least one or two of these things, because you would hope it would come from people who would know better. But it also is one of those examples of, hey, sometimes banks fail, and maybe they should. Yeah. Among other things that have happened this week, we have an unfortunate celebrity death that happened this week. We also have news from the Oscars. One film basically dominated it, and it's probably the one you expect it to. And unfortunately, it's also one I still have not seen, although I really want to. We got some news about insulin pens and prices and things of that nature. And we also got, of course, as usual, a bunch of trailers and things of that nature to talk about. And, apparently there's something in the deep that hates Florida because it put out a good giant snake of seaweed and it's circling Florida as we speak. All that and more in this week's episode of Let's Weekend. So, with that, let's get us started as we always do, traditionally, as is tradition, talking about all the things we've done that have led up to this week. And Chris, as usual, we start with you. What have you been doing this week?
Just enjoying the ridiculous weather this week where we've had a couple inches of snow. Yesterday was a bunch of rain.
Mm-hmm.
Today it's been pretty nice, so that's been a good counter to that stuff. But as we're getting this fake spring that's been showing up, fighting with the winter and all that. So, but for things I've been doing, been enjoying some Star Wars stuff. I went back and finished up Andor, which is really well done. They end in a pretty good place there. I think they're supposed to be doing a season two to finish it off. So I'm looking forward to that. But then started watching The Mandalorian, the last two episodes that have been put out. Because the newest one features a character that I was not 100% sure who it was. So I decided, like, I'll go watch Andor just in case they show up there. And they didn't, so that didn't help me at all. So, but still liking it. Curious to see where that all goes. But yeah, that's been the Star Wars stuff. Been watching more Naruto Shippuden. I think I'm like 25 episodes away from the end. So not too far as sort of this whole posturing around the fourth Great Ninja War is happening. And they do some nice stuff here where Naruto gets some much-needed closure on his life as part of his training involves him doing some stuff trying to get full control over the Nine Tails chakra. And that process leads him to being able to interact with his mom in some form and sort of learn more about the people that his parents were and everything that went into the tragic night of his birth, all that. So yeah, some real nice story moments there. So yeah, liking that a lot, still gonna keep going and hopefully finish it soon. So there's that. That's been fun. For games I've been playing, still playing the Theater Rhythm Final Bar Line. I finished up at least clearing all the songs in the quest mode, which is not all the songs in the game. So when you beat one of the games, the full thing, you get a song that unlocks after it, but that only shows up in the the music section, the music stage section. And those are all essentially like music videos that you can play, featuring some sort of a thematic song for that. So I've been working my way through those. I just finished up the ones in the Final Fantasy VII spinoffs.
Mm-hmm.
So they're starting to look a lot better versus just random clips of gameplay from the NES and Super Nintendo games, that kind of stuff. But the big change they do there is that the instead of being like a left to right sort of scrolling of notes, they change it to sort of Guitar Hero style, you know, top to bottom.
Mm-hmm.
That is makes it a lot tougher to get those timing right, because it's coming at from a different angle, being a widescreen, you know, game that's much less real estate versus, you know, left right on it. So that's been a bit of a challenge to get going there, but those are also shorter songs, so less allowance for fucking up and getting good scores. So been struggling with some of that stuff, but still working my way through that game to get all the achievements or the trophies I would like to get, but some of them are pretty ridiculous. So I'm going to see how that goes. But yeah, let's see. Also been playing more Dead Cells, particularly with the Return to Castlevania DLC in it. Haven't had much luck since I got my good run to beat the Reaper. But I did unlock his scythe. That is a really cool weapon that can, when you kill enemies with it, you get like their spirits for a bit that will attack like the next enemies you see. So that kind of adds some really cool stuff, though I managed to fuck up that run with that thing. But luckily all I've got in my arsenal for drops is a handful of base weapons and a handful of Castlevania stuff. So still looking forward to put more time into that. And the other thing I've been playing is Rocket League. The season started. I had a weird bug show up the first time I started up this season where I set up a new loadout with a new car that gets added with the Rocket Pass. And it's a VW Golf. Very weird car. But when I started playing matches with it, there was no rumble for the boosting. Which was very weird, and I was confused if that was like a gameplay thing or a bug. I swapped over to one of my other loadouts with an older car, and the rumble worked again. I was like, was this car just fucked up? So I quit out and came back later, and it was working again. So it's some stupid bug that I wasn't expecting. But it was very weird playing that game, knowing how it feels with the controller and all that. And having it not work the way you expect, having like rumble working, it felt like this game just felt completely off for the first time in, you know, 7-8 years it's been out. So
yeah,
that was kind of a mind fuck. So, but that's been pretty much it for me. So how about you, Pat?
I've been mainly focused on fighting game stuff this past week. I got a new computer and now everything's set up on it. Focused on getting into Fightcade again, which was a big thing for me a few years back, playing Super Street Fighter 2 Turbo. And I've been getting back into playing that, as well as some other games that Fightcade didn't do the last time I was on there, which is like Capcom versus SNK 2, Virtua Fighter 4, Final Tune, things like that. Rumblefish 2 is one. And then there's some other fighting game stuff outside of Fightcade that I've been getting into, like the Soul Calibur 3 Community Edition, which is basically where modders in the community got a hold of the original PS2 game of Soul Calibur 3, put all the arcade edition stuff in there, and then just started modding it even further to get, honestly, one of the best Soul Calibur games I've ever played. I'm really happy with how it is. That's a game that deserved a lot better than Namco gave it back in the day. And seeing what the community is doing with it, I really hope this has some staying power and maybe even manifests itself into a remaster or something of that nature. It would really be nice to see Namco acknowledge what's been going on here and turning, honestly, what was one of the worst Soul Calibur games into one of the best. I'm extremely happy with it so far, and Between that and being able to play Virtua Fighter 4 Final Tuned at home at all, let alone at home online with rollback netcode, I'm eating good right now, I gotta tell you. So that's been pretty much it for me.
That's it? All right. Yep. Well, as for me, I am pretty much on the downward trend for Trails to Azure. I've almost...
Nice.
Yeah, I started chapter 4 the other night, and I'm about midway through that chapter. So, yeah. And that game does continue to impress me, because it is... It just, it's like, it is, even though I know like what's going to happen, because, you know, so much of this game was already kind of telegraphed by, you know, the Cold Steel series, since they kind of happened concurrently.
Yeah, this is really where the order of releases comes back to bite the series.
Yeah.
In North America.
Yeah. I am still incredibly impressed with how it manages to keep increasingly raising the stakes, like, very slowly. It straight up surprises me when the frickin' Red Constellation shows up and basically sets the city on fire. They show up and then they literally blow shit up and then they disappear again. And it finally results in Crossbell basically declaring its independence, which, you know, we know that doesn't go well. If you played the Cold Steel games, especially 1 and 2, you know what ends up happening at 2. Erebonia ends up invading and annexing the city into itself. Still a lot of fun, still incredibly enjoyable. And I've also been playing another game that I can't talk about right now because the embargo doesn't end until the end of the month, but I'm also enjoying it as well. I am, of course, reading as usual. There's nothing new there. Last but not least, I have a new job. So, yeah, that's going to be happening soon. I don't know when I'm starting just yet. The background check and stuff still has to go through. Might be as early as next week. Might not be. I don't know yet.
Congratulations all the same.
Oh, yeah. So that'll be happening. And, and shouldn't be too much as far as the schedule is concerned. Just means that we might have to move the timing of recording the show around a little bit every so often, but nothing major. So yeah, that's pretty much it for me. Do we have anything we want to add before we move on?
Nope.
Alrighty then. Well, with that out of the way, it is now time for everybody's favorite part of the show, Brandon's Random Factoid. And, well, one of the things I wanted to talk about is it kind of has to do with Japan. Japan, for an industrialized country with as large a population as it has a surprisingly low amount of violent crime. That's not to say that Japan...
Not zero.
Not zero. Japan does still have a crime problem, but compared to like other countries in the industrialized world, it is shockingly low. And there's a lot of reasons for that, you could argue. Some of it is cultural, some of it is historical, some of it is the fact that the cops in Japan basically do not give a shit about prisoners' rights and will do everything they possibly can to get a confession out of you. So, you know, people in Japan kind of live in terror of the police. But the thing is, because Japan has such a low crime rate, that means when an actual, like, serious violent crime does happen, it basically starts a weird sort of, I guess you could sort of morbid curiosity subculture. Like, it's not unusual for cultures to be fascinated with criminals at all. That's as old as humanity. And it's not even that unusual for people to be, you know, curious about violent criminals. I mean, that shit was very common. I mean, back in the Victorian era, there was like a whole industry based around making like freaking, you know, ivory and small Hummel miniatures of like infamous murders and stuff like that, you know. But Japan is unusual because they tend to turn their particular violent criminals into minor celebrities, usually in very strange and unusual ways. We talked a while back on this segment about Issei Sagawa, the guy who murdered and then ate a woman in Paris back in 81. And because of some odd, you know, technicalities in both national and international law, he was able to end up walk free and basically became a minor celebrity for the rest of his life until he died last year. Some more recent examples would be, as far as like meme culture is concerned, would be Nabatatan, which I don't know if we've talked about her on this show, but she was she was a 11-year-old girl who who murdered one of her classmates with I think it was a box cutter.
Yeah.
And she ended up becoming like this weird sort of meme figure because of the fact that the photo they have of her wearing like a Nevada State hoodie or whatever, or jacket or something.
Yeah.
Well, this week we're going to be talking about one of those individuals, mostly because of just how, much like with the Sagawa case, just utterly insane it is. Her name is Yuka Takaoka. And there's not really like a whole lot of story to her, not a whole lot of detail to her story. But what happened is that because of her appearance and the photographs that were taken of her after the police had arrived on the scene, she basically turned into kind of a weird sort of social media, not, I don't want to necessarily say celebrity so much, but an object of really morbid fascination. She became the subject of fan-made photos, videos, paintings, drawings, all of which are dedicated around her. And basically, her story goes like this. So she was a woman who worked at a hostess club in Shinjuku. And in 2018, while she was there, she met a guy there who worked at the bar at a nearby fusion nightclub, which was located at the Kabukicho Red Light District, which is if you've ever played like the Yakuza games or whatever, or if you've played Persona 5, you've essentially come across this place. It's kind of a shady neon colored looking area that's loaded with all kinds of bars and semi-legal gambling dens and pachinko parlors and, of course, hostess clubs and soap lands and stuff like that.
Kamurocho is directly based on it.
Yeah, basically. And so she was working at the hostess club. She met the guy who was working the bar. His name was Phoenix Luna. Yes, that was his actual name. Obviously, it's an assumed name that he got because he was working at a bar in Kabukicho and, well...
Well, he didn't add the Phoenix until after stuff happened.
Yeah, we'll get to that. but yeah, so they hit it off and they decided to move in together. So they moved into an apartment on according to Luna himself, they didn't actually just move into an apartment in 2019, but it might have been something earlier or later. It's not really sure. The story gets kind of... But yeah. So at some point, they move in and they're living together. And then around May 23rd of 2019, while Luna was out, she started to get some weird suspicions about the fact that this guy may or may not be cheating on her. And so he came home late. You know, he went to bed, and so while he was sleeping, she went and fished around and got a hold of his smartphone. And according to her, she was looking through his smartphone and she said that she found photos of Luna being intimate with another woman. So Takaoka, of course, felt sad, betrayed. And then it went from sad and betrayed to wanting this man dead and then wanting to kill herself.
All while she was turning tricks to basically buy up all of his time at his job.
Yep. So she then went to where he was sleeping, got a knife, and stabbed him in the abdomen when he was asleep. She then picked him up or dragged him or whatever to the lobby of their apartment building and basically laid him down on the floor, sat down next to him, and then I don't know who it was. Somebody called the cops. I'm guessing somebody else in the lobby, since, you know, there's a woman carrying a dude bleeding from his stomach and laying down. And there is now. She became infamous because of a photo, and I'm not going to link it here. You can basically just...
It's out there. I don't want to use the word iconic, but yeah. It has that kind of exposure.
Basically, she's sitting down on the floor, covered in this dude's blood, while he's lying down behind her. She's, like, talking on her phone. She's got a cigarette in her hand. And basically, she's just completely ignoring the cops that are around her, talking to somebody on her cell phone. It's a hell of a shot. As you can imagine, she was arrested and charged with attempted murder. And Luna, for his part, actually survived the attack. And he later ended up changing his name to Phoenix Luna because he basically survived an attempt on his life.
He also can't drink anymore because of the damage to his liver from the attack.
Yep.
Which really sucks in his line of work.
Yeah. According to Takaoka herself, she claimed that, quote, "Since I loved him so much, I just couldn't help it. After killing him, I too wanted to die." So, yeah, after the story went public and that photograph started going everywhere, Takaoka basically became an online celebrity. Mostly people started calling her the, quote, "real life yandere." Which, for those who don't know what a yandere is, it's a very sort of old anime trope about a girl who becomes violently obsessive with someone she's in love with, to the point of, you know, using violence and murder in order to get their attention. If you ever played Yandere Simulator, you get the idea. Ever watch Future Diary? Oh, you definitely get the idea. Users on Instagram actually described her as, quote, "a too beautiful criminal." Like I said, originally they started making drawings and paintings and photos and videos and all kinds of things about her. Kenji Nakano of the Tokyo Reporter and Marnie O'Neill of news.com.australia wrote that Takaoka's fan base is an example of a broader and troubling online phenomenon towards attractive criminals, really akin to celebrity worship. I wouldn't necessarily go that far, but yeah.
She's got the army of simps.
Yeah, and, you know, Japan being Japan, it's one of those weird cultural tics of that particular country. But anyway, if you want to know what happened to her, well, she was tried for the attempted murder in December 2019, found guilty December 3rd, with Takaoka sobbing as the verdict was read. The prosecution shot a prison term of 5 years. On December 5, 2019, she was sentenced to 3.5 years in prison, with the judge calling Takaoka's crime selfish and that she had a, quote, "strong intent to kill." Luna stated that he did not hold a grudge against her, stating, "if possible, I want people to be able to lead a normal life rather than paying for their sins." And finally, before the trial, Luna had settled a lawsuit out of court against Takaoka for about 5 million yen, which is about $39,271 in U.S. money. So, yeah. So this all happened. She's in jail now.
Yes.
And will be, I guess, until 2005 or 2004. I'm not sure. It's 2019. It was like near the end of 2019. So it's going to be like 2025. Soon. Yeah. And Takaoka, I think he still works at that bar. And she still has her simps online because...
Yeah, that's the crazy thing about all this. Like, first of all, everyone, don't stick your dick in crazy. We all know this.
Yeah.
Secondly, in spite of everything that she did to land herself in prison,
yeah,
what just strikes me as incredible is that she is not going to be wanting for companionship when she gets out of jail.
Oh,
she's got people lining up.
Yep.
So, oh, society.
Yeah, society. But anyway, and that has been yet another installment of Brandon's Random Factoid. All right, so. Moving on from there, we now go on to the show proper. And as always with the show proper, we start off with our assholes of the week. We have two assholes of the week to talk about this time. And the first one is this really infuriating and actually kind of shady story, especially how they managed to maneuver it in such a way so this happened. But a federal judge in Texas is on the verge of banning mifepristone from the entire country. Mifepristone, for those of you who don't know, is a, I think, still unavailable on the market abortion pill.
Yeah. I believe you can order it online.
Yeah.
For the time being. But yeah, this is something that's, let's see, the FDA approved this as a ineffective drug about 20 mm-hmm. years ago,
mm-hmm.
A little more than 20 years ago. But yeah, the plaintiffs have filed a motion seeking a preliminary injunction to remove mifepristone from the U.S. market or limit its availability. The FDA has asked the judge to deny that motion, saying the lawsuit isn't likely to succeed.
Yeah.
In court filings, the agency has also said that while injunctions are commonly issued to preserve the status quo, in this case, an injunction would upend the status quo that was held for more than 20 years. Wednesday's proceeding was a hearing on the injunction motion, which each side given 2 hours to present their arguments. Mm. About 5 million people have used it since it was approved in 2000. And yeah, the major medical groups say it has a very strong safety record. Induces what is essentially a miscarriage, and there can be complications. The attorneys. The FDA says it approved the drug after, quote-unquote, a thorough and comprehensive review of the scientific evidence presented and determined that it was safe and effective for its indicated use. Lawyers mm-hmm. for the Alliance for Hippocratic Medicine argued that the FDA's approval relied on obscure regulation for drugs used to treat serious illnesses. Lawyers defended the FDA countered, defending the FDA countered that the pregnancy can be life-threatening for some patients. They said regardless of whether pregnancy is described as an illness or a condition, the wording is irrelevant in terms of whether the drug use is safe. Let's see here. This judge, Kazmarek, is the one that asked Strauss-Harris what she made of the fact that Republican attorneys general from more than 20 states have tried to restrict abortion following last summer's Supreme Court decision overturning Roe v. Wade.
Mm-hmm.
Filed a brief in the case saying that the wide availability of abortion pills undermines those states' restrictions. Strauss-Harris responded to the arguments besides the point. She said the FDA approval simply confirmed drug safety and effectiveness and doesn't require anyone to prescribe or take it. The plaintiffs are the ones who are trying to dictate national policy with this lawsuit. And so, yeah, this judge has a number of options from leaving the drug on the market to restoring rules around mifepristone that the FDA and the Biden administration have eased. Recent changes, including allowing it to be mailed or dispensed by retail pharmacies.
Mm-hmm.
And in 2016, the agency decided to allow it to be used during the first 10 weeks of pregnancy, up from 7 weeks. During the hearing, the judge appeared to be considering whether he should order the drug to be taken off the market right away. Mm-hmm. Order the FDA to take some other action. And Alliance lawyers are arguing that the judge are urging the judge to grant a nationwide injunction that would take effect immediately, would at least temporarily remove the drug from the market while this case plays out.
Mm.
And so, yeah, this judge, unsurprisingly, was appointed in 2019 by then President Trump.
Mm-hmm.
He has long-standing ties to conservative religious groups, and his critics accuse the group behind this lawsuit of judge shopping by filing their case in a venue where they view as friendly to far-right views.
Mm-hmm.
It's no accident that the complaint was filed in Amarillo. They know they have a very sympathetic ear in Kazmarek.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the way federal courts work here, It is a virtual certainty that Kazmarek would be assigned to the case.
Mm-hmm.
And the judge made news in December when he ruled in favor of a man who filed suit trying to stop federal family planning clinics in Texas from dispensing contraception to minors without their parents' permission. He said he was a Christian, and the possibility the clinic would give birth control to his teenage daughters violated his religious beliefs.
Mm.
And the judge agreed. And so, yeah, that's a whole thing that's going on.
Yeah.
And yeah, it seems like whatever the result is, it'll probably get appealed and try to push it up to the Supreme Court.
Mm-hmm.
Which will just add to the layers of shit on this whole thing that's going on.
Yeah. Ugh. Yeah, it's infuriating. And the weird thing is that this particular drug, like, completely defeats the whole purpose of, like, what their usual arguments for abortion are. Because all that this drug really does is it just flushes the thing out of your system. Like, if you were having, you know, a normal period or whatever. Like, it's about control. That's all it's about.
Yeah.
It's very obvious now. And considering the fact that these are the same groups of people that have been actively fighting, you know, legislation against child marriage, I think it's become pretty obvious what their agenda is. That shit's happening. And then we got something else that's also infuriating. The Biden administration, they have approved the massive Willow oil drilling project in Alaska.
Yeah, but they've essentially put on hold any other drilling in Alaska. This was one that was in the process of being, you know, blocking it or allowing it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, this approved this scaled down version of the so-called Willow Project, which means the energy firm ConocoPhillips can move ahead with his plan to drill in the National Petroleum Reserve, located on the state's north slope. Mm-hmm. Somebody says the project has potential to produce 180,000 barrels of oil per day.
Mm-hmm.
People pushing for this suggest that it will lower oil prices and bolster national security.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, there's environmental advocates who are calling it a carbon bomb, argue it could worsen climate change, harm biodiversity, and slow a transition to cleaner fuels, that kind of stuff. But yeah, it's definitely become an issue for climate activists, all that kind of stuff. So yeah, it's not great to be approving more of these as we're trying to move people over to electric cars, public transit, and all that kind of stuff.
Mm. But here we are.
Yeah.
So, yeah, unfortunately, the Democrats are not terribly much better at the environment stuff sometimes. So, welcome to America. But unfortunately, it's not all bad. We do have some good that did happen this week. And we do have some heroes. First and foremost, the EPA. They have proposed limiting the amount of forever chemicals in drinking water to the lowest level that can be detected.
Yeah.
But you would think they would have done this already, but no.
Yeah, I mean, we had, Rick Perry in charge of this
for
a while there. So they were working hard on repealing everything they could.
Mm-hmm. That explains everything.
Yep.
Yeah. And if you don't know, forever chemicals are these man-made chemicals that essentially don't break down, especially not in a time frame that a lot of other stuff does, and they are in so much stuff out there that they're probably contaminating lots of people's drinking sources.
Mm-hmm.
It may not do immediate impact on human health, but some of them definitely can.
Mm-hmm.
As yeah, some have been linked to a broad range of health issues, including low birth weight babies and kidney cancer. Drinking water is a significant source of PFAS exposure for people. PFAS is polyfluorinated substances, which is a whole thing. There's a Last Week Tonight episode on those things. And
yep.
It's some wild stuff. A lot of it has to do with like the coding for like cooking cookware stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That was the source of a lot of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
To make sure, you know, nonstick and all that.
Yep.
But yeah, that stuff's been used in since the 40s. In consumer products and industry, including nonstick pans, food packaging, and mm-hmm. firefighting foam. The use now is mostly phased out in the U.S., but some still remains.
Mm.
And obviously it gets overlooked because, yeah, it is hard to detect. Even the limit would be set at 4 parts per trillion.
Mm.
The lowest level that can be reliably measured, which is, yeah, the whole thing there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We also have this little bit from Newark, New Jersey, who took down a statue of Christopher Columbus and replaced it with a monument honoring Harriet Tubman.
Yeah.
Damn good.
Yeah, the monument's named Shadow of Face. It was unveiled Thursday in Newark's newly renamed Harriet Tubman Square, mm-hmm. paying homage both to Tubman's and the city's role in the Underground Railroad, alongside the Black Liberation Movement's history in the area.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was inspired by the Robert Hayden's 1962 poem titled Runagate, Runagate,
mm-hmm.
Which references Tubman. And so, yeah, it's a 25-foot-tall monument, includes a mosaic of tiles and a circular learning wall inscribed with stories of Tubman's life mm-hmm. and the history of Newark's Black Liberation Movement.
Mm.
So, yeah, cool.
Definitely cool. Yeah.
Although you can also just replace your Christopher Columbus statues with statues of director Chris Columbus.
Mm-hmm.
That'd be perfectly fine.
Yep.
Director of the two Home Alone movies.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing else that came after that.
Yep. And finally, last Heroes of the Week is the film Everything, Everywhere, All at Once dominated the Oscars this week. And I mean, it straight up pretty much swept it.
Yeah, won pretty much every category mm-hmm. they got nominated in, including Best Picture, Best Lead Actress with Michelle Yeoh.
Yeah. Who
is only the second woman of color and the first Asian woman to win that award.
Mm-hmm.
The other woman was Halle Berry.
Mm-hmm.
That was almost 20 years ago at this point.
Yeah.
And that's it for anybody that wasn't white.
Mm-hmm.
Best lead actor was Brendan Fraser, which is his first, and a great story there since he took a long break from acting,
mm-hmm.
Partly due to the horrific, you know, abuses he took doing his own stunts for, you know, the Mummy movies and that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Where, fun fact or not fun fact, he almost died making the Mummy.
Yep.
During that scene where his character is getting hung, he was actually getting hung.
Yep.
They were trying to make it look more realistic, and the thing he had his feet on to kind of keep him safe kind of slipped and ended up blacking out for a bit there and luckily came back to reality.
Mm.
But he had, you know, took chair shots in that movie that busted up his back and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. There's his neck got fucked up, his spine mm-hmm. got fucked up, and you're like, you know, modern movie making, nobody would take that much damage mm-hmm. without, you know, a lot of work with stunt doubles and all that. But for whatever reason, back then, actors were expected to fuck themselves up
mm-hmm.
for these movies. So
yeah,
great for him to get back to this kind of success here.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, for like best director, the Daniels won, mm-hmm. who directed the movie.
Yep.
Best film editing, best original song was Natu Natu from RRR.
Mm-hmm.
Though they had a weird, I think they performed bits from these songs, all the contenders throughout the show, and Natu Natu featured a lot of white people in it when they mm-hmm. were performing it, so that people were like, maybe not do that. Maybe source out a lot of, you know, Indian people and whatnot for that.
Yeah.
Let's see here. Yeah, they Everything Everywhere All at Once won Best Original Screenplay.
Mm-hmm.
The other one that won big was All Quiet on the Western Front, won a bunch of awards on its own.
Yep.
Let's see here. Yeah, Jamie Lee Curtis won for Best Supporting Actress, which was her first. And she, you know, gave a shout out to her parents who both were actors. Mm-hmm. I think she was the first in her family to win one.
Mm-hmm.
Ki Hui Kwan won Best Supporting Actor.
Mm-hmm.
Great story there, since he, you know, quit acting for a long time because he just didn't see any good roles come his way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Guillermo del Toro won Best Animated Feature Film with his Pinocchio movie for Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
That was great to see. So, yeah, a lot of cool stuff there.
Mm-hmm. All right. Yeah. And, of course, all the usual suspects were like, oh, this is terrible. That movie's terrible. The Oscars are stupid. Blah, 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 blah. Yeah. Yes, I'm talking about Matt Walsh because, unfortunately, I have to. Though I would prefer not to because for some reason there are people who take him seriously. But
also, their awards show, you're not going to like everything that wins every year.
And what's especially weird is that after the movie won the award, I went on like IMDb, and there's like all of these people who's like, I just don't get it, you know? And it's like, that's fine. It's okay. You don't have to get it. The movie isn't necessarily for everybody. That's why it was produced by A24.
Yep.
But yeah. But yeah. So yeah. That is the end of the show proper. We're now moving on to the proper show proper. And the first story is, unfortunately, we have to report the death of Lance Reddick, the actor who, not just in film, but also in television and video games, is a very big figure.
Yeah.
Like, I just finished playing, you know, Forbidden West, you know, Horizon Forbidden West, and he's a major part of that franchise's plot, or at least the character that he plays is.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, he seemed like a guy that liked to take a variety of roles, didn't think he was too good for, you know, games or movies or TV.
Mm-hmm.
He liked to try a lot of stuff. You know, was in that Resident Evil show for Netflix,
mm-hmm.
which wasn't very good, but he was very good in it.
Mm-hmm.
He's like one of those actors where, like, if you see that he's in something you weren't particularly interested in, you're, you know, interested in it, ticked up a bunch.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, he seemed to just pass away from natural causes.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to be the reporting right now, but yeah, 60 years old,
mm-hmm.
way too young.
Mm-hmm.
Just finished working on John Wick Chapter 4, which is out next week.
Mm-hmm.
A few other things as well. It's, yeah, sad to see him go. He seemed like such a popular actor at this point, 'cause he didn't really get big until like about 20 years ago with The Wire. So yeah, he's taken a while to get to where he was,
mm-hmm.
But luckily has, you know, used that as a force for good, and his family is, appreciating all the well wishes and all that.
Mm-hmm.
But also they make mention on his Twitter account to, you know, donate to momcares.org,
mm-hmm.
In Baltimore, his hometown. If you want to properly honor him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, people in Destiny were hovering around his character,
mm-hmm.
To, you know, pay, you know, respects to the work he did there.
Mm-hmm.
He loved to do messages for people as Zavala in the Destiny game stuff on his Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
This is my guy that everybody loved to work with.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I think I saw a story that he told about, you know, working on John Wick Chapter 4 and Keanu for his birthday. Even though he wasn't working on the movie, on any scenes that day, he decided to show up to the set because he wanted to see his buddy Lance Reddick, and wrote him a note thanking him for working on the movie and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, if Keanu Reeves believes in you, then you must be a good person, because that's Keanu Reeves' thing.
Mm-hmm.
He's a guy that has, like, waivers in any contract he does that, you know, he can't use his performances for AI or NFTs or any of that shit, because he doesn't want to deal with any of that.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So, goodbye, Lance. But damn, did you leave a hell of a legacy behind you. But now moving on from that, a third mid-sized bank collapsed this week. This time it was First Republic. But unlike the other two, this one got rescued by the bigger banks who swept in and, well, tell them, Chris. Yeah.
11 lenders are depositing $30 billion mm-hmm. in this mid-sized lender bank to keep it propped up. Bank of America, Citigroup, JP Morgan Chase, and Wells Fargo will deposit $5 billion each. Goldman Sachs, Morgan Stanley will deposit $2.5 billion each.
Mm-hmm.
An additional $5 billion will come from the other five banks there. So they are able to prop it up. Those Silicon Valley Bank and Signature Bank were the other two that cratered. And that was more so due to a lot of investment in crypto mm-hmm. and that kind of stuff, as well as, let's say, Trump era rules sort of pulling back regulations that Elizabeth Warren and some other Democrats put into place during the Obama administration mm-hmm. to try to keep banks, you know, in a healthy state, so they don't collapse suddenly like they did back in the Great Recession.
Mm.
Yeah, conveniently that got repealed, and here we go.
Mm-hmm.
The mid-sized bank level of banking is in rough shape these days, especially because you got a lot of the richer folks that work there or have their money in these banks, you know, looking very carefully at when to pull their money out, that kind of stuff.
Yep.
Which is a thing that really fucks with banks.
Oh, yeah.
They're not built for, you know, a large portion of their people pulling out all of their money at once.
Mm-hmm.
That's not how they work.
Mm.
As much as you might think, they just like keep it all in a vault that they can pull out, you know, indefinitely, but
mm-hmm.
you know, that stuff all gets liquidated and they invest that stuff to try to keep more money coming in.
Yeah.
Sometimes that doesn't work, but
yeah,
that's why they do loans and all that kind of shit.
Yep. So yeah, that happened. And I have a feeling we're probably going to see a fourth one collapse pretty at any point in time, probably sooner rather than later, because yeah.
This tends to have a domino effect.
Yeah. Now for some good news. Novo Nordisk has announced that they'll be slashing prices on its U.S. insulin pens and vials by up to 75% starting in 2024.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah, brought on by Eli Lilly, dropping their prices to, $35 a month
mm-hmm.
For their stuff. This is not going to be as good of a deal as that.
Yeah.
Because they are, let's see, a vial of Novolog and Novolog Mix 7030 will drop 75% to $72.34 from $289.36, which that's a hell of a drop there.
Mm-hmm.
Flex pen options will fall to $139.71 for more than $500.
Mm.
Which just shows you how much they were gouging people that they're willing to make these kind of moves.
Mm-hmm.
They have others that will drop 65% from their current list prices, that kind of stuff. So, yeah, good news for people that get theirs from Novo.
Mm-hmm.
But also shows how much of a markup these things get, especially, as we said, those are U.S. prices. They're not what they charge in other parts of the world.
Yeah, pretty much shattered the illusion completely, didn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, you realize that if the government had just decided, stepped in and said, made them do this, it would have had just about the same effect.
Yeah. They're doing it with Medicare mm-hmm. costs for that stuff.
Yeah.
Which is sort of pushing them to do this.
Yeah. But yeah. So, speaking of earlier of mid-sized banks, the Justice Department has opened a probe into the Silicon Valley Bank after it collapsed. Was that? I think that was last week. Yeah, it was last week.
Yeah.
gee, I wonder why.
Yeah, federal prosecutors are starting to ramp up a probe into the doomed Silicon Valley Bank just days after a bank run led to its swift collapse. In response, the Biden administration took extraordinary measures, shore up billions of dollars in deposits to contain contagion from spreading across the banking sector. While the exact nature of this investigation is unclear, but it seems like a formal announcement will happen in the near future about this. But yeah, they'll be wondering a sort of one area that may intrigue justice lawyers involves shares sold by top company executives before the bank imploded. So it might be some insider trading stuff that they saw coming. As the CEO sold $3.6 million of company stock 2 weeks before the bank reported massive losses. So there you go. But yeah, the news is not taken as well because I think the Wall Street Journal tried to blame it on their slightly diverse executive group, their chairs, because they have like one black person and a couple of women, that kind of thing. Like, well, we can't say it wasn't that, but you know, we like to think that there wouldn't be an issue if they were all white men. And it's like, man, saying that in 2023 is fucked up. Because it's the bank didn't shut down because they had some non-white people there and gay people. It's not how that shit works.
Nope. No, it doesn't. And now for some more news. The state of Ohio has filed a lawsuit against Norfolk Southern to make them pay for cleanup and monitoring costs, you know, after they, you know, had a train derail and sprayed a very nasty, hazardous chemical.
Yeah, filed by our state attorney general, Dave Yost. Federal lawsuit also seeks to force the company to pay for groundwater and soil monitoring in the years ahead and economic losses in the village of East Palestine and surrounding areas. But yeah, luckily nobody was hurt, so it's more paying for cleanup and environmental damage caused by this train derailment, as well as the various costs to keep monitoring the groundwater and soil and make up for, you know, the business that was lost in this town as a result. So, yeah, take them for all they're worth.
Good.
Yes. Every last drop. Because it's because of their bullshit that this happened. And they knew it was going to happen eventually, and they didn't care.
Yeah. It's another Trump deregulation effort there.
Yeah. And we also got this story here. T-Mobile has paid $1.35 billion for Mint Mobile, which is that service that's partly owned by Ryan Reynolds.
This is fucking hilarious because I was about to drop T-Mobile for Mint.
Yeah.
Yeah. That is a service that people thought that just got like a good deal to get Ryan Reynolds to do ads for them. But now he's been a part owner. I don't know how much he might own. But this is a
about cash, 2/3.
Yeah. This is a cash and stock deal. So he gets a good chunk of that money. But they seem like they are going to essentially keep Mint running as it is and be like their cheap service, since I guess they've already been using T-Mobile's wireless network.
And Ryan Reynolds is going to take his money and turn around and buy the Ottawa Senators.
Yeah. Yeah, they offer plans for as little as $15 per month, so that's definitely a good thing for a major telecommunications giant like that to have cheap options for people that don't want all the bullshit that a lot of those companies can throw onto the services they offer. So, yeah, there you go. Ryan Reynolds now probably a billionaire.
Yep. I mean, if he wasn't already, but
yeah,
but yeah, he definitely is now.
For the moment, anyway, because I imagine most of that money is going to go into the sale of the Ottawa Senators. So
probably. But next up, and by the way, if you haven't noticed by now, we're very much non-serious portion of the show. usually it doesn't happen this early, but here we go. French Bulldogs. They were the most popular purebred dog breed in the U.S. in 2022. And
yeah, breaking the Labrador Retriever's 31-year streak.
Mm-hmm.
The American Kennel Club announced this, that the French Bulldog was the top breed for 2022. They're pretty cool dog breeds, though. Much like a lot of those smaller breeds, they are genetically predisposed to lots of issues.
Oh, yes.
They say they are brachycephalic dogs. Mm-hmm. Meaning their shortened skulls and snouts make them more prone to respiratory, eye, skin, and spinal problems.
Mm-hmm.
So much so that some countries have banned them. Netherlands announced in 2019 it would force a ban on the breeding of short-muzzled dogs. Norway banned the breeding of bulldogs until it was overturned by a judge last year.
Mm-hmm.
In 2017, the president of the British Veterinary Association said people should not buy brachycephalic dogs. So, mm-hmm. But yeah, obviously if they already exist, you know, there's nothing wrong there with adopting them. They can still be great dogs either way.
Yep. And yeah, let's see. We also have the story, because this is just so stupid. There's actually a class action lawsuit against Buffalo Wild Wings that's alleging its boneless wings are not wings.
Yeah.
I'll do my best to hide my astonishment.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a weird thing because, one, of course, alleging that they're not really, like, deboning wings, which mm-hmm. is like, yeah, that's too much work for the amount of meat they're getting there. Boneless wings are just white meat, generally.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe people have pictures of the menus that they have, and they explicitly say, like, these are white meat pieces of chicken for the boneless wings.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, I don't know how much of a leg they have to stand on here.
Yeah.
But, yeah. Even so, the Buffalo Wild Wings sort of made a weird tweet as well, saying, it's true, our boneless wings are all white meat chicken. Our hamburgers contain no ham. Our buffalo wings are 0% buffalo.
Mm.
So, yeah.
The closest thing I can think of is when Taco Bell got sued for the fact that their beef did not meet whatever FDA standard was required to market something as beef.
Yeah.
But yeah, so there was that. Now for this little bit. Oh man, there is a 5,000 long mile long snake of seaweed that is circling around the state of Florida.
Yeah.
Now this isn't just any kind of seaweed. It's a specific type of seaweed. It's like a type of algae bloom that tends to, like, grow in the Atlantic, and this particular bloom is pretty much the largest they've recorded since they've started, you know, keeping charge of this type of shit. And, yeah, it's nasty.
Yeah, this is called the Great Atlantic Sargassum Belt.
Uh-huh.
Stretches over 5,000 miles, weighs over 10 million tons. It's circling around the Gulf of Mexico and the Mid-Atlantic, where the right combination of currents and wind could push it ashore onto Florida.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I assume this is all due to climate change, because these things were not that big of an issue at a certain point. They did not sort of bunch up to this degree.
Mm-hmm.
But they mention here, scientists noticed a change in sargassum levels in 2011.
Mm-hmm.
When masses of the seaweed multiplied, gaining in density and size, becoming so big they were captured on satellite images.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, today the patches comprise a 5,500-mile-long, 10-million-ton belt It circulates annually, starting near West Africa and snaking through the Gulf of Mexico back into the Atlantic. More than double the width of the contiguous U.S. The mass fluctuates in size from month to month, with high point generally landing in the summer. And yeah, these things can cause a lot of issues in this mass because, yeah, in the open sea, healthy patches of sargassum can soak up carbon dioxide and serve as a critical habitat for fish, crabs, shrimp, turtles, and birds. But if it moves closer to the coast, the seaweed can wreak havoc on local ecosystems, smothering coral reefs and altering the water's pH balance.
Yep.
So sure, clumps of sargassum can choke local economies by closing tourism sites, cutting off marinas, constricting fishing yields. And yeah, it begins to rot after about 48 hours on land, releasing irritants like hydrogen sulfide, a hazard to anyone with respiratory issues like asthma. And yeah, as a result, it causes a smell that smells like shit or rotten eggs. So yeah, this is definitely a big concern. But yeah, they don't really have great means for like keeping this away from the shores of Florida. So, but consider it karma for Ron DeSantis' bullshit.
Yeah, that's funny. But yeah, so that nasty shit is happening down there. They are, of course, doing what they can to clean it up as soon as it shows up on shore, but it is labor intensive, and as you can probably guess, the smell is just awful. The comparison to rotting eggs is very apt.
You're saying they might not notice the difference?
Yeah, pretty much. But now we have some science news. Scientists have spotted evidence of volcanic activity on Venus. Which is, that's actually fascinating.
Yeah,
they've seen sort of, structures on Venus that kind of looked like they could be volcanoes. This is sort of the first time that they have been able to see some actual evidence of this, as they have shown some photos here lower on the article that shows, like, the difference in this one area between two different times that they've taken it and showing, like, oh, there's some new shit here. This seems like a potential place for events, one that's maybe expanded in this other mass area where it looks like some flows have happened, that kind of stuff. So they're trying to sort of get a 3D mapping of Venus's surface to sort of explain more about how this stuff works, that kind of stuff. So, yeah, some cool stuff going on there.
But yeah, that's happening. Now for some kind of concerning news. Sam Neill has been treated for stage 3 blood cancer.
He seems to be okay right now, as he's cancer-free. Because he's bounced between chemotherapy drugs that I think originally he got chemotherapy and that failed, but he's been working with a new drug that he's receiving monthly for the rest of his life, though he's now cancer-free. He says here, I'm not afraid to die, but it would annoy me because I'd really like another decade or two, you know. We built all these lovely terraces. We got these olive trees and cypresses. And I want to be around to see it all mature. And I've got my lovely little grandchildren. I want to see them get big. But as for the dying, I couldn't care less. Yeah. Not great news for him, but seems like it's under control for the time being. Hopefully it doesn't go bad anywhere. But yeah, hopefully he can stick around for a while.
And next up, Ticketmaster is doing shit again. They have angered Robert Smith of The Cure, which is a very bad idea.
Yes.
Over exorbitant fees for cheap ticket prices.
Yeah. His new tour that they're working on, the Lost World North American tour, they basically decided to go for cheaper ticket prices. I think I saw people that were getting $20 tickets. That's, I think they're getting a 4-pack of $20 tickets.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's $80. And the fees and such were a little bit more than $80 to push it to like a bill is around like $170. And he was tweeting in all caps, as you can tell, he's an old guy. I am as sickened as you all are by today's Ticketmaster fees debacle. To be very clear, the artist has no way to limit them. I have been asking how they are justified. If I get anything coherent by way of an answer, I will let you all know. X. He did tweet a little bit later saying that he had gotten a response from them, and they were doing sort of a $10 refund per ticket for all verified fan accounts for lowest ticket price transactions.
Mm.
So at least doing something, but yeah, there should be means of, you know, limiting the percentages of these fees. That's the way it should work, because, you know, you're not getting, you know, $10 of fees for a ticket that costs $20. That kind of stuff. I know the venue and all that should get some money, but it should not be like doubling the price of the ticket for a tour that's designed to be reasonably priced. Versus like the Taylor Swift tour that's probably making tons of money there. Or Bruce Springsteen tickets, I think, are also up there for money as well. But yeah, you know, Robert Smith and The Cure want to do an affordable tour, and they should be able to do that, and Ticketmaster should have a means for, you know, scaling their prices appropriately. And not just gouging people that want to just go see, you know, The Cure.
Yeah. Yeah, don't piss Roger Smith off. It's not a good idea.
Robert Smith. I saw pictures of him on his Twitter, and it's like, man, you've committed to that hairstyle.
Yeah.
It's, for the last 40 years.
Yeah, it's his trademark. He's not getting rid of it until his hair falls out.
He hasn't used a comb in 30 years.
He hasn't used a comb since 1979.
he's had short hair at times from what I could see.
Oh, yeah.
Photos, but other than that, his hair looks like he wakes up, combs it with his fingers, and is like, all right, we're good. It's like, okay, cool.
And yeah, now we're on to movies and shit. And we got this story right here showing that once again, nostalgia and a failure of creativity very much is unfortunately still very much the rule in entertainment right now. Supposedly, there's going to be a Good Burger 2 movie set for Paramount Plus.
Yeah.
Hmm.
With Kenan and Kel returning for that.
Yep.
So that would be cool, but also, why do we need this? I don't know, maybe they're, still in fast food at this point.
Uh-huh.
Maybe in modern fast food, whatever that is, compared to what it was when they did that movie in the 90s.
Yeah.
I don't know. But it being on Paramount Plus seems like very much admitted, like, this has limited reach.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I guess they're going to begin production in May and release it later in the year. So won't be too far from now. We'll see it. Let's see. The official logline of the movie, Dexter Reed, Kenan Thompson, is down on his luck after another one of his inventions fails. Ed, Cal Mitchell, welcomes Dex back to Good Burger with open arms. Gives him his old job back with the new crew working at Good Burger. Dex devises a plan to get back on his feet, but unfortunately puts the fate of Good Burger at risk once again. So I guess Good Burger is just run by Ed at this point. And he welcomes him back because he's failed on this invention or whatever it is. Oh, I have not seen Good Burger in a while, so I don't remember exactly what was going on all there. There you go.
Yeah. And here we go, folks. Now we got a bunch of trailers. First and foremost, we got an official trailer for Joyride. Yep.
Yeah. This is like a raunchy comedy. This is a Red Band trailer. This has the producers of The Neighbors, a co-screenwriter of Crazy Rich Asians, This features Ashley Park, Sherry Cola, Stephanie Hsu, fresh off of Everything Everywhere All at Once, and Sabrina Wu. A sort of get together, go on this trip to China, I guess, and then things go sideways involving drugs and all this, that they get into a lot of weird trouble, all that kind of stuff. So looks like it could be fun. That'll be in theaters July 7th.
Yep.
So yeah, there you go.
Yeah. We also got a trailer for Netflix's Beef. Yes, that's what it's called.
Yeah, this is a series, I think 10 episodes, featuring Ali Wong and Steven Yeun. It'll be premiering April 6th. Basically about these two people that sort of have a road rage incident between them one day that causes both of them to just have like an unending feud with each other. So you see that a lot in the trailer of them trying to fuck with each other constantly. So much bring out a lot of their worst impulses. That looks like that could be pretty fun. I like both those actors a lot. So looking forward to that.
And we also got a teaser trailer for Disney Plus's adaptation of American Born Chinese.
Yeah, this is featuring three of the stars from Everything Everywhere All at Once. Michelle Yeoh and Ki Huy Quan are the stars of this, with Stephanie Hsu also being in there. It's an original series for Disney Plus where basically, I believe, all three are sort of living through this like folklore, Chinese folklore kind of adventure in America, all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, that looks neat.
Yep.
It'll be on Disney Plus May 24th. So, yeah, there you go.
And finally, last but not least, we got an official trailer for Disney's live-action remake of The Little Mermaid.
Yeah, looks pretty good.
Halle
Bailey does a good job with the singing. But they feature just the one song there, but well, I guess they kind of featured two. There's the song with Queen Ursula, though. I don't know if it's the same one. It's in the original movie, but yeah. Looks pretty cool, though Sebastian was changed to a crab from a lobster.
Wait, I'm pretty sure Sebastian always was a crab. Yeah, he was always a crab.
I don't know about that. I think it's...
was always a crab.
I don't know. I saw people complaining about that.
Well, it's the internet. They're idiots.
Yeah. I was like, okay, I don't know. But, you know, lobsters are not necessarily... great looking in real life. They're basically sea insects, giant sea insects.
They're sea roaches, yeah.
There's a whole joke in The Simpsons where Homer's trying to raise one to fatten it up and sell it for money. And he looks at it and has like a face of a child. When they show the really thing, it's like a really gross looking thing. So, yeah, that'll be out this summer. Let's see when. May 26th, so that'll be out there. Only in theaters, but probably on Disney Plus by later in the summer. So there you go.
Yeah. All right. So I do believe that we have ourselves a show, folks.
Yes.
So if you have a question, comment, or something you want us around the air, you can get in contact with us at letsweekenders@gmail.com. That's letsweekenders@gmail.com. We got it for you in our show notes. Also, on top of Apple Podcasts, you can catch our little bit of unscripted shenanigans at TuneIn, Google Play, RSS, archive.org, or basically any kind of podcast aggregator that you can think of. Yeah, so we're going to go ahead and wrap it up here. Thank you, Pat and Chris, for joining me tonight.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Hope to do it more often. And yeah, join us next week when we have a whole new fresh dish of bullshit to dish out to you. And yeah, if you liked what you heard, please do not hesitate to recommend it to your friends, your family, your mortal enemies, your just sort of common acquaintances, maybe even strangers on the street. You know, that could work. In fact, why don't you just go up there and say, if you recommend, say, I'll pray for you. That always works. I swear we're going to get arrested one of these days. Good night, everybody.